you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? This week on the SDR show, a newer band, but boy, are they blowing the fuck up. It's called Whiskey Myers. They're kind of country, kind of rock, but they are fucking all over the place and killing it. John Jeffers joins us on the show. Just a fun episode. Cool dude. Really good music, too. It's country rock. It's like old school rock. I just really dig it. I'm glad we got them on the show. This episode, like every Saturday episode, is cut about 30 minutes in. If you want to hear the whole episode, every episode we've ever done, commercial-free, in HD video, with chats, and all these other good things going on, go to gasdigital.com. If you use the code SDR14, you're going to get a 14-day free trial. The free trial has been doubled, so you could really delve in to not just our show, but Shannon's show or any one of the other shows on the Gas Digital Network. Go to gasdigital.com. Use the code SDR14. You know what? Go and listen, then delete it. Who cares? You know, if you were a fan of Whiskey Myers, you could have heard this 5 days ago in its entirety at gasdigital.com. That's what it's about. But we do love that it's been growing and getting bigger every week. I saw we're in the top 100 on iTunes last week, so thank you so much for that. But here it is right now, the Whiskey Myers episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton, James Mattern, in with me once again and back in his kitchen, which always makes me happy. And I see, since the last time we did the show, you opened your gift from Chris DeStefano.
No. It's still in there, but I hit it with a Bruce Springsteen record because I knew you were going to bust my balls. So I have the whole thing behind the Bruce record. So I have a little bit of ambiance. So it looks real professional.
I will allow it then. Now it looks nice. You're showing Bruce Springsteen. All right, so let's introduce this band and this man right now. Not to embarrass him, but they're described as today's Lynyrd Skynyrd. I've seen that in a few places. It's an interesting band because they are dubbed too rock for country, too country for rock, which is pretty wild because they kind of weave in and out of both genres. They have six albums, the newest one, which I am sure he's sick of having people pronouncing it correctly, which is Tornio, just so you know. It's a town where they recorded it in. We'll get into it. They are one of, I think, only two bands that are platinum-selling independent country artists. Maybe there's three, not 100% sure. And their last five have been independently released on their own Wiggy Thump Records. It is the guitarist, John Jeffries, the band, Whiskey Myers. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me, man. Happy to be here.
How do you feel I did on my intro? I did all right?
Dude, I was fixing to say it was a hell of an intro. It's good. Yeah.
So I want to start with what really made me laugh. I try doing a lot of research always, and I've said this a lot, so I apologize at times, but you listen to interviews, and how I do it is I stock up the interviews when I go on a long run, and I have a voice recorder, right? So like as I'm listening, but I hear something, I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And then when I go home, I make the notes, right? One of you guys is from Palestine, Texas, or Palestine, Texas. I don't know how you pronounce it, but one of the original guys from Palestine, Texas. And the interviewer says this: well, you're from Palestine, Texas. How do you feel about what's going on in Palestine?
It's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable move right there.
I couldn't believe that someone would do that. And I don't think it was. I think it was one of the Cody's. One third of the band is named Cody, by the way. There's six guys in the band and two of them named Cody. But
that's a good country band. Yeah. Good. You got to have at least two Codys.
Every rock band, every country band needs two Codys. And they just said, I don't think it was you. I think it was Cody. And he goes, you know, we just don't talk politics. And that's just the way you want to be. So that really, I was running and laughing my ass off just 2 days ago from that question. Do you remember that question or no?
I do. I think you might have corrected him first because he said Palestine. And it's like, no, first it's Palestine. Yeah.
It's really funny. I give the guy credit for trying, though.
For sure. They try. You know, a lot of people, they always want to make something about politics, for sure.
Right, of course. That's what they want to do. They want you to take a stance on something, which is like, let's just fucking stick to the good old days when we just used to play music and talk about music. But we'll go back to the beginning with you guys. I'm sure I always have to preface this with, I probably fucked up a little bit, but it's kind of fascinating. You and one of the Codys played baseball together. That's how it started. You thought, I'm going to be a fucking baseball star, or at least it was a you're going to go pro or whatever. It was something that was a passion for both of you.
It was.
And then something, a realization was, this is not happening, and transition to music. But here, James, is where it gets kind of interesting. They didn't start learning till he was 18 to learn to play guitar, which is late. Found out that his dad 18. Wrote music and his mom was in bands. And this part made me laugh. His father shows him a picture of a band and he goes, who's the hot chick? Son, that's unfortunately your mother.
That's your mom. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the truth.
Wow.
That's pretty wild. And she actually opened for AC/DC. What was the band?
It was called Shadrack with a K. Yeah.
And what kind of music was it?
Man, I think it was more like psychedelic, you know, kind of poppy rock, if I grab it. Yeah.
Have you since listened to some of your mom's music?
I have not, and I have tried to get a hold of that since I've been older, and I'm not. Unfortunately, she passed away a couple of years ago, but no, I haven't. And even my mother and I both went down wormholes trying to find it, and it's like, maybe this will bring some light to something.
Yeah, because also, I mean, it was an AC/DC show. You'd think maybe that got recorded, and at least some of her music would be in there.
Yeah, she said her fondest memory was getting into after the show, or maybe it was before the show, that he just got into a cattle trough. He went swimming.
Was it Bon Angus? Scott era, or was it Brian Johnson era? It's Angus.
That's
pretty cool. That's fucking great. I just love the idea of your father having to explain to you that the hot chick is your mom.
It's like, who's the hot? I think Cody Cannon was there too, because my dad taught Cody and I how to play guitar together, both of us. His grandpa had an old Martin, I think it was a Martin acoustic, and he was like, you know, your dad can play. We've heard that he can play, kind of. You know, can he play? And I'm like, well, I've heard him play a couple of times. Yeah, I think he can play. And it just created this whole holy shit moment. What is this? And then opened up this, to me, it was the floodgate of just, where's this been? You know, I was taking baseball extremely seriously. You know, I wanted to play ball, and I went to college to try to play ball, and that didn't work. But it just opened up the whole, you know, who's the hot blonde in the middle? It's like, that's your mom, son. And I'm like, let me get that out of my mouth real
I'm glad he told you before it got out of hand, because that could have been really embarrassing, you know?
God. I'm sure he loved it. I'm sure he loved it.
And then also just the fact that you two started learning guitar at 18, whenever you hear about a band, especially one as, you know, prolific as you guys, six albums, like it's one every few years, and, you know, just so much music, and the level, which we'll get into as well, that you guys have achieved, that you started late in life and pivoted careers. That's just fucking wild, dude. That is really wild.
It's pretty surreal, man. Like, it just wasn't expected. You know, most people, I mean, not most people, hell, nobody's normal, but it's like you have this plan and you try to attack it. You know, we didn't even plan to be successful musicians. You know, honestly, we just, Cody Ken's the lead singer, Cody Tate's the other guitar player. We just got together and we played music and women liked it. And because all the women would come over to the garage and listen, all the men came over.
Right.
And before you knew it was like, dude, what are we doing? You know,
and that's what you said. You started organically in the garage, and then at one point it's like, well, enough people are coming to check us out.
We should
look into this.
Yeah. What do we do now? You know, we're not going to be doctors. Clearly none of us are doctors. You know, we're not that smart. So it's like, we need to find a bass player and a drummer.
What a change that would be, though. You were going to be a baseball player till 18, music, and then in the middle of this interview, you're like, you know what? Maybe I should become a goddamn doctor. And then you just leave music for that?
You already did it.
What if the women come over so you can like check down their throat to see if they're healthy, and then all the guys come too? There it is. Yeah. This is a sitcom.
I often say that I'm not a gynecologist, but I could take a look. You know, you never know. But let me ask you this with the Codys, because Cody Tate is Bill, right?
Bill.
And How did that discussion go? Was it Cody said, look, I'm the fucking singer, dude, so you're going to be Bill from now on? Or how, was it a coin toss? Like, how did that get decided?
He got, I think Cody Cannon actually started calling him Wild William Tate. And before it came into William, and then William got shortened down to Bill, and it was like, fuck yeah, we don't have to call another dude Cody anymore. Let's just call him Bill. You know?
I'm sure he was not too thrilled with that, but that's, you know.
And we actually have our front of house engineer's name is Cody too. So there's a bunch of Codys.
Jesus, is that just it's a big Southern thing, I guess, right? I guess it is. That's funny.
What do you call that, Cody?
Shithead.
Of course you do. He's not really in the band. That's great. He's just part of it. That's great.
No, I'm kidding. We call him Simpson by his last name.
And also, so the band, and now from what I've been saying, you started officially in 2007. I think it was May 12th, 2007, as Whiskey Myers. But originally the band, which I no disrespect to you guys, pretty dumb name. It was just called Lucky Southern. Was that the original name?
Terrible. Terrible idea. We tried it as an account. We played like one acoustic show, just the three-piece acoustic, just three guitars, and we called ourselves that for, you know. We pretty much immediately figured out that wasn't a very good idea.
And the name came from some drunk dude that lived, which sounds like a Chris Farley sketch, but a guy that lived down by the river, and somehow he became Whiskey. His nickname was Whiskey, and his real name was Myers?
Yeah, he had a hair lip. You know, he had a really bad hair lip, so he would kind of call himself Wiggy, too. So, I mean, like, so that's how we kind of call each other Wiggy.
Is that where Wiggy Thumb came from? Was from him? Wiggy, so he's to thank for the name of the band and the label?
Yeah, man. And we don't even know where he's at.
Maybe he should send him some royalties or something. Jesus.
Something. Yeah. Just a homeless dude down by the river, Natchez River.
That's pretty wild. That's crazy.
Nuts.
I wonder if he knows. I wonder if he's around. How old was he back then? That's, you know.
Oh, man. He was pretty old to be, you know, wandering around with buckets down by the river. So I don't know. He might not be with us anymore. I wish I could meet him, though.
And then also, which is, I've actually heard this story before, and it's just funny how often art repeats itself. So your first show is May 12, 2007, and you were supposed to get paid X amount of dollars, but you guys drank so much that you owed the venue money.
Yeah, that's another true story. Yeah, man. We were like, cool, let's get this paycheck. You know, let's celebrate. You know, $500, that was a lot of money.
Right.
For the time, it was like, we were happy. And I was like, well, you know, you actually owe me about $275. Yeah, you owe me some money. But we want you to come back next week. And I was like, all right. We had actually outdrawn the headliner at our actual first show.
Wow. You know,
he was generous enough to ask us back, probably because we owed him some money. But
did you get a bar tab on the second gig, or you didn't get a bar tab?
We did. I don't remember. I don't remember what the tab was. I think we were a little more strict on ourselves.
Probably a good idea.
That didn't help that.
And then, so you're going slow and steady. You're building a fan base locally, and then the first album comes out in 2008, which is called Road of Life. That album was done with. Now every other album since is on your own label, but that album, for my research, basically doesn't exist anymore anywhere. Correct?
Basically, yeah. It's pretty much gone.
And is it because it was a label dispute, and it is what it is, and that's where it is? It's something you can or can't talk about. I don't even know, but it is weird that a band at your level, you want to go back to the first record, and it's like, oh shit, it's fucking nowhere.
Yeah, you can't get it, and which, you know, we kind of just it wasn't a dispute or anything. We had done that with I think it was Smith Entertainment, which I don't believe even exists anymore. But no, there wasn't a dispute or anything. We just kind of felt like at the time that didn't really speak for our band as good as we wanted to at the time. So we wanted to start, you know, a whole new thing. And in hindsight, it created a lot of demand for it,
right?
Which we didn't approach it. That wasn't our business model to try to do that. But I mean, it created that. And now it's like, I mean, it's kind of cool that it's not there. You can't have it. But if you do find it at a record store or something, you know, it's really neat. It's a cool find. So
there's no thought of like at some point on the, I don't know, 10th anniversary, 15th anniversary or whatever, because 2028 will be 20 years ago, right? Which is, it's 4 years from now to maybe release it. Or You have the rights to it? You do have the rights to it?
Yeah, we own the rights to it for sure. Yeah, we released it. We did a short, like a 10-year anniversary where we did a special gold album on vinyl that we released with a part of our record type deal on some packaging stuff. But it's still basically shelved. It's still not on the market or anything.
Oh, that's pretty wild. It's kind of cool. And so what's fascinating is then really you guys are putting out basically an album every couple of years. What I thought was interesting is that you said when you're in America, and I touched on this at the top of the show, they put you very often on country bills and people think you're too rock. And then when you guys are in Europe, they put you on heavier rock bills and people think you're too country. But I guess you're drawing in fans from both sides to meet in the Whiskey Myers middle.
Yeah, and it really does truly work that way a lot. You know, not that that's the best answer is to go, you know, play with death metal or something like that to try to grab a new fan base, but it really does work. We have a surprising amount of fans that's like, dude, I was just straight hardcore rock and roll, and I had friends or somebody that drove me to a show, and it's like, well, okay, this isn't country. I thought this was going to be a country show, and you know, so and vice versa. So we kind of do have a way of attacking it that way, just organically, and we've done that with touring with, you know, big country stars, or we go, you know, open and play with the Rolling Stones.
You played with Rolling Stones. You played with Shinedown, which James is fortunate to be able to say that he played guitar for him to sing Simple Man in the studio, which was cool. But, you're able to work all over the place and yet not come off as like, well, what the fuck are these guys doing here? That's kind of an interesting, it's a tricky balancing act.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it does work. And that's a great example. It's the Shinedown thing, you know, we don't play that style of music, but we can hold our own up against it. You know, not that it's a competition say, but we can hold our own. Like you said, it's not surprising. What the fuck are they doing here?
Tailor your shows to that? Like if you're saying, well, guys, this is, you know, we're opening for Dolly Parton. I'm just making up something. So we're going to play more of our country-esque stuff. Or we're going on the road with Shinedown or whatever. So we got to do the more rocky stuff. Or do you not give a fuck? You say, we're just going to do our stuff.
Zero fucks given on that. We usually go into the same mindset. It's like, hey, we're going to give them the best show that we possibly can. That's us. You know, we're not going to tailor or change anything because of anybody, honestly. You know, and we've been fortunate enough to be able to do that too. And we've actually gotten to the point that we're at that's extremely fortunate that we've never had anybody to tell us what to do. We've always done it our own way, and we've always let the music be organic. There's never been a plan. There's never been a plan to even start the band, let alone record a record. You know,
evident by your first name of your band is evident. You never play. What were you going to say, James?
I do the opposite, baby. Punk rock for life. Opening for Dolly, nothing but just banging out. Open for Shinedown, ballad. I'd write a song about a dead kitten. I would do that, man.
That's just a freak her and her fans out. I get it. All right, before we go any further, I love these guys. Even though I personally do not use Kratom, Shannon does. She loves the Trainwreck blend. It's available at yourkratom.com. They've been supporting the show for 4 years, which means you guys are digging your Kratom. So if you're a fan of Kratom, there is nowhere else to go but yourkratom.com. It's the $60 kilo. It's high quality. It comes to you fast. Unique strains, unique blends, only available there. No more wondering how long has it been sitting on the shelf. It's all about high-quality, curated Kratom delivered direct to you from YoKratom.com at a mere $60 a kilo. YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. Let's get back into it. And also, John, what you're
head
wild
games,
is,
dog. Head gangs.
You've been touring as a musician since you're 19, right? I don't know how old you are. I don't know if you make it publicly knowledge, but I'm imagining in your 30s now is my guess, right?
Yeah,
for sure. As of these last year or two, you're now a father. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that that's going to change the intense touring schedule, or is it not?
The touring schedule has changed, yes. And we're not used to being as off as we have. But I'm not so sure that families played such a huge... I mean, they did, and you get older, and you start thinking about, you know, other stuff. You start slowing down a little bit. But we only toured like that because that's what we always did. You know, we didn't know that it can be more lucrative if you tour a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, we never really knew that, or the opportunity, or to even have the money to be able to tour a different way. So, you know, The families definitely play a role in it, but we're still going to tour. You know,
one of my favorite stories with you is that you were offered to open at Red Rocks for a band, and you're like, you know, we've never even been there. So if we're going to do Red Rocks, we'd rather headline. And a couple of years ago, you headline. And then is it last year or the year before that you sold out two shows at Red Rocks?
Multiple shows, yeah. Both
it's
years.
It's fucking great. That's a real way to say, fuck you, we're doing it our way. Yeah, and I think for the most part, I think one band member has been replaced, but everybody, the crew, 90% of you are the same people, right?
Yeah, it's the same guys, except for our bass player. There's only one guy that took over his job, but our original bass player, which was our lead singer's cousin, which didn't even play bass before we started the band, he gave us a 2 years notice that he was going to quit.
Wow.
2 years notice that he was going to.
2 years?
The greatest employee of all time. Are you out of your mind? Oh, 2 years notice?
2 years notice that in 2 years he wanted to have a baby, and whenever he had a baby, he didn't want to be on the road anymore. So, I mean, it was no surprise. He didn't quit. He didn't get fired. Nothing. It was
That's not quitting. That's like amicably parting ways.
Yeah.
Like, and we're all friends. That's not quitting.
Babies and we're done. I'm done. So, I mean, that was the easiest thing. And even like, you know, all the crew for the majority is the same guys. We've only added in more people. It's all like a big, dumb family.
That's crazy. That's it. By the way, I don't mean to be stereotypical, but like when you image of like quintessential country, good old boys, it's these guys that are keeping the same people around. They're all coming up together. They're drinking together. They're doing shit the way they want to do it. Like it almost like it's writing itself, basically, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Yeah.
It's pretty wild. And then arguably the moment that changed the band's trajectory is getting on Yellowstone, which is a few years ago now, or I think it's 4 years ago now. Right. And what I think is funny is that when you went on, three of your albums went to top 10 on iTunes. The only reason why you guys said yes really was to meet Kevin Costner, and he wasn't even there that day. But it was the guy, I think he's the creator, Taylor, created the show, I believe, right? And he was just a fan and found your singer's number, and that's how it all came together?
Yeah. I mean, that's the story. We were just coming. I think we were getting back from Europe, I believe, or we had done a long, like a 36, 37-day run, and we were tired. And then we got the calls like, hey, they want you to come play on this show. And we're like, well, it sounds great, dude, but we're tired. You know, we want to go home. We've been, I don't know where we were. We were probably doing Download Fest in Europe. I don't know what it was. But it was like, dude, let's just go home. And they kept pressuring. And we were like, who is this guy? You know, who's in it? Who's this Taylor Sheridan guy? We don't know him. You know, what is this? Who's the guy? Kevin Costner's in it. It's like, well, shit. You know, that's if he's in it, it might be a pretty good show. So we rolled the dice. We said, screw it. Let's go up to Utah. We filmed in Utah. Flew up there. So where the fuck is Kevin? He's not here. It's like, cool. This is a waste of time. But, yeah, it ended up being pretty good. You know, we were already kicking ass before that. And, you know, Bruce, our manager, he's always stuck to his guns on that. We were on a trajectory that was really – we were powering through a lot of really good stuff. You know, we were selling out all over America from Seattle to New York. We were doing great, and I think that just whenever Yellowstone took off, it kind of just opened us up to a much more broader audience that hadn't heard it.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I've actually never seen the show, but people seem to fucking love the show, and evident by the fact that it made half of your records go into number one, you know, top 10 on iTunes, and then a lot of people just probably also, they hear certain songs, like, oh, yeah, that's from that fucking show, and that brought a whole new fan base to you guys.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah, it was a blessing. Sure. Taylor didn't even, he was showing his producer, he was like, you know, I want the music to sound like this. And they were listening, he was listening to us showing the producers. It was like, it has to be, you know, it needs to be like Whiskey Myers type stuff. And she was well, why don't you just go get them? And he's like, I never, that's a good question. Let's go get them then. And that's just,
that's fucking cool as shit. I mean, that's what you could do when you're running a big show, right? Do shit like that.
Right.
Now that Beyonce has leaked into the top of the country charts, does Whiskey Myers want to put out an R&B record at all?
I don't think that's in the works.
Huh?
But I don't think that's in the works yet. But, you know, okay. At this moment, when are we going to studio, man? You never know what's going to come out.
Okay, that's what I like. I've heard, like, even with the last record, Tornillo, you guys go in with some sort of game plan, like, loosely, but you stand in a circle and just start fucking figuring shit out, right?
That's it. It's organic, just like everything else we do. Let it come, and like a more of a rocking tune can turn into a country tune, and vice versa. You know, Cody can come in with a country song, and we turn around, and it's you know, sounding like a rock and roll song. It just happens. And most of those songs, I think we had like, you know, 30 something songs on the board during Tornillo, and you run down all these songs, but you can see it in everybody's eyes, and we've known each other long enough. Whenever you start jamming one, it's like, okay, well, that's fixing to go on the record, you know? And you just start thumbing through them, and if nobody gets the twinkle in their eye, then, you know, you just go to the next song.
And then one of the goals of this record, which, I mean, arguably, even though that starts out with like a little instrumental with the title track, mm-hmm. and then goes into John Wayne, the idea was to make people dance. That's what was the goal for this record. You wanted, after five albums of wanting to do it, you finally get a brass horn section in there for the first time ever. And those songs, especially John Wayne, kicks it off perfectly with, it's an upbeat, fun fucking song. But I think it's the next song. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Is it Antioch? Am I saying that wrong?
Antioch.
Is it true that Cody got arrested at a Dairy Queen for stealing cars, or is it hyperbole?
Man, that could be the old man down by the river. That's probably where he got that. Yeah, the intro to that, there was a mariachi band that was in at the studio, on the grounds of the studio, whenever we got there. We were like, well, how great is this? You know, we didn't cut the horns there for any of the rest of the record, but since the mariachi band was there, we had him to come down and write a piece out. You know, we had this idea, and it just kind of bloomed into this.
Wow.
The sound that you hear, the opening to the record, that was done right there just to try it, to see if it even worked. And we went separately. We went off, you know, later on down the road, a couple of months later, we went and recorded a whole different, you know, horn section down. And we did some in Austin and some other places. But that mariachi band was there, and it was spur of the moment.
And that was at Sonic Ranch, which is in Tornillo, right? And that is like some big hacienda, like old school, way you'd imagine, like, and there's different houses with different bands recording. And that's where you recorded this record, right?
Yeah. Super cool place. It's on this huge pecan orchard. And it's it's probably an hour or so down southeast on the border of Mexico. And it's literally, that property is on the border. You can throw a stone across the river. But yeah, you're down there in it. It's old school hacienda, you know, multiple rooms like you see kind of on a old Western, man. It's super cool.
What were you going to say, James?
What kind of farm? Because I feel like I've been saying it wrong, and now I feel like a dumb.
A pecan?
He says pecan, but you're from New York. You say pecan.
I'm a pecan, baby. I'm all about the pecans.
Yeah. Yeah, pecan in New York, pecan in the South, for sure.
Yeah. But what is technically, like, what is, if someone's last name was pecan, wait, did I just say it a third different way? I just did it a different way.
Depends on where it grows up, I guess.
It's that regional?
I think so, man, but I've heard some Georgia guys say pecan. Or, oh, hell, I don't even know how.
You say it so elegantly. It's kind of like when I go to England and they say aluminium, and I'm like, you're doing it right, and we're just dumb goddamn Yankees.
All right, that was about half the episode of the Whiskey Myers Band with John Jeffers. If you want to hear the whole thing, go right now to gasdigital.com. Use the code SDR14. You get a free trial for 14 days. Cancel. I don't give a shit. Just go sign up.